You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Toby, and we've got Gaetano Greco on the line. G'day, Gaetano. How are you?
Oh, hi, Annie. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, how are you, Gaetano? How's it going?
Hi, Toby. I'm really well. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. So you got local elections coming up?
Yeah, we do. There's elections across the whole of the state of Victoria, 79 councils, and in Darebin we also have an elections too.
Yeah, awesome. Are you excited? You're doing a lot of groundwork preparing for that?
I'm running around, door knocking, letterboxing, talking to people, because I think these elections are really important. At the local level, there's a lot of stuff that's happening. As they say, councils are the tier of government closest to the people, and we just got to make sure that people that are involved in grassroots campaigns and activism are represented in councils.
And Darebin's got, even most recently, it's maybe the most mobilised council I've seen with the, apart from Marybeck maybe, but you've been fighting multiple battles, whether it's even simply just symbolic statements of principle, like putting the Palestine flag on the council building.
That's right. Look, in Darebin, there's a lot of stuff happening in Darebin, partly because of the reason, Darebin's a council where there's a lot of gentrification that's occurring. And so there's there are lots of issues associated with that. And as you said, Toby, the Palestinian issue was an issue that was taken up by Darebin Council. Not only did we do pass a very progressive motion to support Palestine symbolically with the raising of the flag, which is still flying over the Preston Town Hall nearly a year after the latest events that took place in Palestine and the West Bank, particularly in Gaza. But also the council were able to pass motions about the boycotting or looking at boycotting any commercial ties with companies that have anything to do with the Israeli Defence Force, and so in relation to procurement policies and things like that. And that's really important. That's where it really bites. We know that, and I think earlier, I was listening to your program earlier, somebody was talking about South Africa. What really turned the tide in South Africa was the economic boycott that took place. And I think that's where our attention has to be next in relation to Palestine. And I think councils could play a big role in that. We've got a $200 million budget, and we deal with lots of contractors and also big multinational contracts. And we really have to scrutinise what their supply chain is and who they actually service beyond councils.
And with a seemingly unwilling state government, then it's up to local council to take up the fight for the people.
That's right. And it's a local government taking up the fight, which has been really a grassroots, community-led campaign, and by councils taking up the fight, because councils are a tier of government, let's not forget that, and by councils taking up a fight and having an impact like they have, in turn it has an impact both on state government and on federal government, and we've seen that. Some federal seats are now are in jeopardy because the Labor Party it has not been acting at a national level in relation to the Palestinian issue. And what's happening on the ground in terms of municipalities where those federal seats are being held is actually putting everything into play in relation to what's going to happen federally for some of those politicians. So councils have a real impact in that sense.
Well, and even with the campaign that you helped lead with the Save the Preston Market, that's really a being a voice for the community when the state governments and the relevant ministers are completely uninterested or despondent to the community needs.
That's right. They were uninterested before, but we made them interested. And the way that we made them interested, Toby, was by, just pure organising, on the ground, community support, throwaway cliches, but you know, just your ordinary mums and dads, if you like. The event that actually sealed with saving the Preston market for now was the hands around the market. We had thousands of people that came to actually wrap themselves around the market and to say that to the developers and particularly to the state government, you can't touch our market, you can't knock down our market. And we were quite successful in influencing the minister, the state minister, particularly the Labor minister, to put in planning controls which stopped the developer from potentially knocking down 80% of the market. So we have planning controls now that protect the market, but we have to go a step further, and now we're talking about public acquisition of the market, telling the state government this market is so important to the community. We know that it's in private hands, but as a state government and as a council, we have to seriously consider compulsory public acquisition of the market, because the market serves a community need and it needs to be put in public hands.
And we have like a parallel, really. Like, I found out recently that Moonee Ponds used to have a market back in the day, and it was probably sold under the same guises. And now I lived in Moonee Ponds for a while, and I live in Essendon, not down the road, and you can see the vacuum of community that is left when a market is replaced by Coles and Woolworths and My Pet Warehouse, and then glass monoliths of unaffordable housing where people don't access the community right by their doorstep because there's nothing there for them.
Well, you're spot on. I'm glad that you mentioned the Moonee Ponds experience. That's what frightened us in Darabin with Preston Market. We saw that experience, and I actually followed that process with Moonee Ponds. They actually promised the same sort of things that they were trying to promise here, and with the Preston Market. Oh, we're going to rebuild the market. Don't worry, we'll have a new, brand new market and things like that. And what did we see? We saw sort of a bit of a wasteland where there's no soul associated with.
What you mean they lied?
With a big L, I think. So we saw a lot of that happen there, and we didn't want a replica of that taking place, because we could just see through the crap that particularly the developers and the other agencies were talking about, and we sort of just completely saw through that, because Moonee Ponds was just an example, just a few kilometres away from Preston.
It's a giant wind tunnel where it's bereft of community. It seems like a video game that hasn't properly loaded, where everyone's hiding behind their houses.
Yeah, spot on. And what's happening is that, see, as I mentioned before, we really have to go to the next level. The next level is to say that this market, because of its public good, has to be publicly acquired. And there is a provision in state legislation where you can compulsorily acquire private land for public purpose. And why it needs to be acquired, this is a very fundamental point. There's going to be huge development that's going to be occurring along High Street as part of the state government's big build to allow developers to provide more housing. Not a problem about that, about providing more housing and more dwellings. Up to 15,000 more dwellings are planned to be built along the high-speed corridor just where the market is. So what we're saying is that where is the public open space going to be? So the public open space needs to be the market. So the market needs to be acquired that provides for that increased density some public open space. So we're really going to push that line. And a lot of people sort of say, well, where's the money going to come from? Well, developers have to pay an open space levy. And also developers have to pay a development levy. So a lot of that money can be actually used towards publicly acquiring the market.
It's funny that they should say, oh, where the money's going to come from. But when you consider that these people are making money hand over fist and making social wastelands for the people who actually live in these in the city. I mean, really, public amenity must come into the equation.
Look, Annie, you're spot on. Look, one of the trends that's happening in terms of urban planning. See, when you knock down things that have a certain culture, a certain tradition about them, and then you replace them with these bland shopping centres, what it makes all our municipalities homogeneous. There's no distinctive character about, like, you could be standing in a shopping centre in on the other side of the world, somewhere in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And or you could be standing in the same shopping centre or in a similar shopping centre here in Darwin, and you're basically having the same experience of a shopping centre. There's no distinct element. That's why markets provide a distinct element that is an expression of the local community that you would never get out of a shopping centre or out of a Woolies or out of a Coles. That's why markets are important, because they're an expression of culture. They're an expression of the local community that lives in a particular area. And also, what makes that area distinct from another area. So it adds to that sort of diversity that we all strive for. When we travel, one of the reasons why we travel is because we want to experience something different. But we're making everything the same as a result of bad urban planning, where we allow just big developers just to carbon copy right across the Melbourne metropolitan area, and the same shopping precincts and the same types of shopping centres, which just turns our cities into blandness.
Yeah, yeah, well said. And of course, you're contesting the next local election, and obviously having diverse voices on councils, local councils, is important.
Yeah, I'm running again, and I'm really excited about running, and my enthusiasm doesn't go away, even though I've been on council for a long time, over a decade now. But I think it's really important, particularly this election, because also what we're noticing, Annie and Toby, is that councils at the moment, many councils are actually privatising a lot of their services. We've seen this with aged care. We've seen this with kindergartens. These are traditional services that councils were providing.
Yeah, that's right.
With a lot of good quality services, with well qualified and well paid staff. And what councils are doing is they're just disowning themselves, walking away from providing these services, and in a sense privatising the service. Then where you get private providers coming in like sharks, taking over those services. And what they do is not only that the service diminishes, but also the pay of the people that are providing those services also diminishes. And we need to stop that. And we really need to stop that. There's a real danger that a lot of privatisation could come in the next round of council terms.
And the thing that people should remember is that there's an example in very recent history through COVID at the effects of a private aged care system.
Oh, my God. Yes, we don't even need to go there. And we're coming to the end of the program. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Oh, look, I really appreciate the opportunity, guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gaetano.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.